school was started in 1989. I come on the scene in the fall of 1992. A fresh high school graduate from public school. My dad had passed away 2 or 3 years prior. It wasn't until really my 11th grade year that I began to get serious with the Lord. Still had a lot of baggage when I came to school. A lot of things that needed to be developed. And the environment that I think that we provide today is the same environment that God used in my life. And I want to see it be used in yours too. And I'm grateful for the early days of being able to see it in the early days in the Shelby campus. And eventually we'd move here to Lattimore. And this morning, I just want to take a few moments to tell you the importance of building some walls on the foundation that has already been made. So I want you to look with me in Ezra chapter 4 for just a moment. In Ezra chapter 4, you're going to find the adversaries of Ezra and the crowd that wants to do right. They are ratting them out to the king, so to speak. It's sort of like the sibling thing where the older sibling says, "Dad, you told him not to do that, and look what he's doing." Well, what happens is the adversaries of Ezra, they write a letter to the king. In verse 11, it says, "This is the copy of the letter that they sent unto him, even unto Artaxerxes the king. Thy servants, the men on this side the river, and at such a time." Now, notice what they say. "Be it known unto the king that the Jews which came up from thee to us are come unto Jerusalem, building the rebellious and bad city." Now here it is. "And have set up the walls thereof and joined the foundations." And so here you find in the history of Israel, foundations have already been laid. Obviously the walls have been destroyed. They're rebuilding and they're connecting the foundations with what? Walls. If you want to say it this way, it's like a second generation. And at the end of this message today, I want to tell you some dangers with second generation leadership and in second generations and ministries. And I'm going to compare it to another aspect of something that comes in the second generation. But I believe that it's very important for every faculty member, every staff member, and every student to grasp the foundations of the school and to build on those foundations. There are many ministries today that are being destroyed willingly and even deceitfully by many preachers that come into a church, they come into a ministry, and they change it from the foundation. And that's dishonest and it's a shame. And part of it may be that there's an ignorance. There's not really a good driving home of the foundations. But for others, it's just a lack of moral character. If you go into a church, listen, you don't go into that church pretending to be one thing and change it to another. That's deceitful. And there are colleges today, listen, there are tombstones of Christian colleges today that I will not name, but you could visit through history. And it's in part because they left their foundation. And they lost their original purpose. And so we do well to learn from history. And so we're going to talk about the walls of Ambassador. Walls are for defense, therefore protection, therefore identification. And so we'll just stick our flag in the ground on these things to tell you things that are very important about the foundation and the walls of Ambassador Baptist College. Now let me tell you this. How did I learn this? Well, first of all, I experienced it. I experienced it as a bumbling college freshman who was so hyper when he first came that I had no idea of the investment that Brother Comfort and our faculty would make. Faculty members like Dr. Scoville that would come, not with a promise of a great salary, but just a promise of, you know what, God's doing the work here, be a part of it. And these people left comfortable situations to come to Shelby, North Carolina to teach. And I got to experience that, but as a freshman, I have no clue. I have no clue of the uncertainty they've stepped in. All I can think about is a school bill. How am I going to get my work done? Why is McDonald's working me so much? That's what's going on in my mind as a freshman. And so we come to this point where I experience it. I experience the chapel services. I experience the classroom. That's where I was introduced to Ambassador. But beyond that, I spent many hours sitting down in this man's office, which is now my office. And just asking questions and listening and trying to figure out, why do we do this? Well, how did you come to do that? And it was just hours upon hours upon hours. And that's how I came to learn it, and I hope that I can impart some of it to you this morning. These things are essentials of ambassador. Now, the first thing is that we are a school, and by the way, they're not necessarily in the order of importance, but nonetheless. A school with a single focus, and that's the ministry. Now listen, that's what we do best, but it's not only what we do best, that's all that we do. That is our focus. The day that comes when we offer a degree on trash pickup, all right? You say, that's no such degree. I know, I'm just trying to be facetious here. But something outside of the realm of ministry is the day you need to show up at our doorstep and say, you know, that's not what you were founded for. It's a single focus. Brother Comfort, and I've seen it as well in my travels through the years, somebody would go to a Christian liberal arts school, and then they're told this idea. And now listen to this idea. They say, well, you need to go to a school where you can learn a trade as well in case the ministry doesn't work out. How many lawyers go to school and then take a plumbing degree in case it doesn't work out? You know, how many electricians say, well, you know, if this doesn't work out, I'll take a nursing program. Listen, usually in about any special degree you see, when a guy goes, he's all in. Now, I understand the concept of a liberal arts degree, and we're going to talk about that here in just a moment. But when it comes to ministry, what better place to train than a place that is all in? You know, the Bible tells us in 1 Timothy 1 and verse 12, and I thank Christ Jesus our Lord who hath enabled me that He counted me faithful, putting me into the ministry. I want you to be in a classroom with men who love the ministry. I want you to hear from ladies who have served the Lord how they love the ministry. Listen, that kind of influence, you're going to need all you can get now to prepare you in the days to come. I remember sitting in the dorms. We used to dream about revival meetings and all kinds of things. We would talk about maybe one day I'll get to do this or one day I'll get to do that. Why? Because I was in a place that was established for the purpose of training for the ministry. That is all that we're going to do. We're not going to stretch out ourselves and offer all kinds of other things. Why? Because we're a school with a single focus, a focus on the ministry. Now, another thing that Brother Comfort showed me very early on by example in the classroom and later on as I would listen to him is the importance of a strong Bible curriculum. Now, let me tell you something. There's a difference between Christian colleges, and Bible institutes. Now, let me tell you what these are, and I would argue this up against anybody in the Christian college realm. Most Christian colleges today, their basic format and training is in liberal arts. All right? Now, you say, what's that all about? In liberal arts, you have a core, like history of Civ and other things that are offered, and then you have, for a Bible major in a typical Christian college, 32 hours of Bible. All right? That number may vary, but not as much Bible is offered because of that liberal arts core. All right? People commonly ask me, I say, what's the difference between ambassador and other Christian colleges? Well, one of them is the amount of Bible that you get. In a liberal arts core, you're going to, I think Brother Comfort graduated with 32 hours of Bible. Okay, so that's a liberal arts core. Now let's talk about a Bible institute. There's some of you, you say, well, I've been to Bible Institute, and Bible Institutes certainly have their places in local churches and training folks for you know, service within the church. But let me tell you the difference between a Bible Institute and a Bible college. In Bible Institute, you go one day a week for 2 or 3 hours. 3 hours is really pushing it, but you know sometimes that's the case. In a Bible college setting, when you're taking a full curriculum, you're in a 3-hour class 16 weeks out of the year. So you understand there's a depth that's offered in a Bible college setting just by the mere amount of time that you don't get in a Bible institute. Now, it's not that I'm against Bible institute, but what I'm saying is you're in an environment here that is soaking you in just an intense environment of the Bible. In a Bible college, instead of having a liberal arts core, we have a Bible core. That's why some of you men are going to leave, and when you leave here and you work in your graduate studies, you're going to get advanced standing. Why? Because you've had 66 hours of Bible when most seminarians or whoever have only had 32. Now, it's very important for that Bible core. The reason why is because if there's ever a day it needs the Word of God and people need to be well-versed in it, it is right now. There is more Bible illiteracy in our society, and God forbid that we have more of it in our pulpits. I'm telling you, the world is pushing against the Bible. The answer is not less Bible in our ministry training. I think it's more. Wherewithal shall a young man cleanse his way? By taking heed thereto according to thy word. Your life needs to be transformed by the Word of God, and you need to know the Word of God. That's a powerful combination. And when you're in a Bible college and you have 60 to 66 hours of Bible, it makes all the difference that's needed in the ministry. I'm amazed in preaching today. In preaching today, there is a strong need in our pulpits for Bible preaching, and that has to be preceded by Bible study. And so don't take it for granted. Here at Ambassador, we're going to have everybody's a Bible major. And then, of course, we have pastoral studies on down through the list for the ladies, Christian elementary education and such. But it's a strong Bible foundation. Now, another thing that Brother Comfort has already alluded to is an experienced faculty. What is the Bible pattern for training people for the ministry? I'm going to tell you what it's not. It is not people who have never done the work of the ministry, who are credentialed with degrees from one wall to another, that are teaching in the classroom. That's not the Bible way. And in our Christian colleges today, I'm not against somebody being intellectual, I guess, if that's a word for being smart. I don't think God prides ignorance, that's for sure. I mean, He doesn't exalt that. But I'm telling you, there's an intellectualism that hits sometimes in ministry training, and I think it deadens us. And that deadening effect is happening in Christian colleges. I talked to a guy one time. He was a Bible major in a Christian college, and his homiletics class was taught by a speech major. Is that who you want to be taught? If you're going to be a brain surgeon, would you like to be taught by an anesthesiologist? I promise you this, the people you practice medicine on wouldn't like it. Their brains wouldn't be healed, but I guess they'd sleep all the way through it. But that blew me away. I was talking to another young man. He was in a missions major at a Christian college, at a Bible college. I said, "Who's your missions professor?" He mentioned him. And I said, "Well, where did he serve on the mission field?" His answer was, he said, "Well, he's not actually been on the mission field. He's going to go on deputation soon." Now, on the inside, I was like this. But on the outside, I was like, You say, why did you hide your feelings? That just wasn't a good time to express them. You know, by the way, with Brother Johnston's passing, you know, one of the premiums we could have done is I could have gotten somebody here who would just give you a bunch of notes that they could regurgitate, or I could get people who have been there and done that. And I'm so thankful for the men from BIMI that have jumped in to help us this year. And you know what I put a premium on? I know when you have to swap every so often, listen, I understand that's an adjustment. You say, well, he teaches one way and he teaches another. I get it. You say, well, he tests one way, but he tests another. And it just makes it hard. I get it. But I would rather you be taught by somebody who walked with God, walked in faith, and lived in a hut, than a guy who has degrees on his walls and no calluses on his hands. You know what the Bible pattern is? It's Paul's training Timothy's. Elijah's training Elijah's. I want you to be trained by the people who have stood on Mount Carmel. Not teaching theory, but saying, yes, at one time I was scared to death. And so an experienced faculty. I want our teachers, I want them to be veterans in the ministry. And by the way, let me say this about our faculty members. We've said this on occasion, but with our faculty members, we expect them to be exemplary in their testimony. We expect them to be exemplary in their behavior. When you sit in a classroom, I don't want the Bible being torn down. I don't want somebody filling your mind with all kind of, well, this in the Bible, is this really? Listen, that kind of speech has no place on this campus. You know, in every language class that I sat in during my time here, let me tell you, my confidence in the Bible was not torn down, it was built up. Built up so that when I stand in the pulpit, I can open the Bible that I have and I can tell you, listen, this is the Word of God and we're going to preach it. It really bothers me. Social media, every once in a while, I just have to totally push it away. But it really bothers me. Some preachers, their habits on social media is to talk about what's wrong with this passage and how to ascertain this or that. And I don't do it, but I just want to push caps lock on my keyboard and say, why don't you quit criticizing it and just preach it? I don't want a faculty that's going to be filled with criticism towards the Bible or, for that matter, developing a critical spirit among you when it comes to other ministries and churches and colleges. Not everybody does things like ambassadors. You know that? By the way, not everybody cooks like your mother either. But that doesn't mean you go in and give Mr. Pirro a mouthful and say she wouldn't cook fettuccine like that. That's what we're having today, by the way. You know, there's a lot of that sniping that takes place, and we're just not going to get into that. There's a maturity level that, when I was a college student, I found I had the maturity level of a gnat in some things. You become an authority on parenthood, and you make stupid statements like this. My child never act that way. Why is that preacher doing that? I have no clue. The truth is, you're the one that really doesn't have a clue in some of that stuff. But you develop a critical spirit. You know, there are other schools that do things differently than us, but I don't want my ministry to be always known about what I'm against. You need to hear about what we're for and why it's important. And I never want you to step out of a classroom with such a superior idea of, you know what, well, we're a lot better than them. I was glad the other day for the young man that came from another school, and we've had them here in the past. And I just want you to understand, I don't want that spirit among our faculty. I don't want it among our students. And you know what? If any time you ever hear anything like that, you can make a beeline to my office, bypass Mrs. Conley, and just come right in and say, Brother Bill, this is happening. Because we don't want to tolerate it. Another thing that's a distinctive of the school, I think that's one of the most misunderstood things about the college, is our position on the local church. Some people say, well, the college wasn't started out of a local church. And you find some people that are big proponents, they say, well, Ambassador was not started out of a church, therefore it's not legitimate. Now, I would buy that, or I could at least accept what they say if they'd be consistent. It stuns me because they're on mission boards that weren't started out of churches. And I'm like, you know, that's... Now, I'll tell you what, I've had guys out in the West, they say, well, Brother Bill, we just don't support Ambassador because it's not started out of a church. But I'm going to tell you what, they're consistent. You know what, we love each other. And it's like, man, you go do your thing and we'll do ours. And we don't meet each other with scowls. We're very friendly and supportive of each other as much as we can. But, you know, a lot of people, they say, well, Ambassador doesn't have a church here. And what I'd like to tell those men is come to Shelby, North Carolina, and talk to a few pastors. And you tell me what those pastors would say about our students in the local church. You know, I love the fact that when you come here, you have 6 weeks to visit, and then you settle into an independent Baptist church, and you're there every time the doors are open. You know why? Because many of you are going to have the opportunity to have personal contact with your pastor and pastor's wife that people in a larger setting would never have. I love it because you know what? You have the opportunity to be in a variety of ministries. You get into a church and they say, boy, if you're breathing, we can use you in this or this. I mean, you have your choice almost in some places. Somebody says, boy, I want to be in youth ministry. And you get in, the pastor, youth pastor says, all right, you know what? We're going to start you out here. And you have the opportunity to put your hands to it. You don't get lost in the crowd. And you have an opportunity to choose a variety of ministries. And the truth is, you're in the size of churches that are probably going to be a lot like the size of churches that you're going to minister in the future. There's nothing wrong. I'm not one of these guys that believes that the larger something is, the more wicked it is. All right? And the smaller it is, the more spiritual it is. I don't boil it down to that. But I'm going to tell you, most of you are not going to function in a church. It's going to have a balcony sound booth with three screens and ushers and guys on security detail. As a matter of fact, the pastor ends up being the soundboard guy. He ends up toting in his hip in case there's an unruly person. I mean, he's the security team. He's everything. Now, I'm being a little bit facetious, but, you know, the truth is, listen to me, there's a lot of churches here in this country that are in need of people like you, and they're not going to be perfect when you get there, and even when you get there, they're still not going to be perfect because you're there. But you know what? You're going to have to figure out how to minister in those contexts. And so I think you've got a great realistic model in which you can learn now, and you can look around and say, all right, well, I remember when I was at Emmanuel Baptist Church, and boy, doing these different things, God used that to shape, you know, and you were in the type of environment that you're more than likely going to minister in the future. And let me tell you another thing about your local church service. Listen, if you can't be faithful now in the church, you're not going to be faithful later. Now, there's some of you young people right now, you're learning aspects of character. You're a Sunday school teacher, and so it's Saturday, and your roommate comes to you and says, hey, let's go to South Carolina and let's go to the Beacon. And then after we go to the Beacon, let's go down to my parents' church on Sunday and we'll have a blast and come back Sunday night. You say, oh, man, that'd be great. So you fellows are thinking with your stomach. You go to the Beacon to eat. And then Saturday night it hits you. You say, oh, man, I got Sunday school. I'll get somebody to take care of it. And so Sunday morning, you call the pastor. You say, oh, Pastor Ogle, I just meant to tell you, I'm not going to be teaching Sunday school today. If that's you, I pray you have great indigestion and your girlfriend writes you a Dear John note. You say, really? Not really, but that's how I feel. And it probably doesn't feel nearly as much as what Brother Ogle would feel. You know what it's called? It's called commitment. I just expect that if anybody's committed in a church, it's our students. You have a responsibility, you take care of it. That's part of your character. And if you can't take care of a Sunday school class, don't you be fooled. You definitely won't take care of a church. If you're here and you're a Sunday school teacher, you know what? You ought to notice who's absent in your Sunday school. And that week, you ought to be saying, hey, where were you at? Follow up. Keep your say, Pastor, so-and-so wasn't here, but this is what's going on. You embrace that. And if you take those things seriously, you know what? If you can be trusted with little, the Lord will trust you with more. Luke 16:10, he that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. So we talk about the local church, but I'll tell you another thing that I experienced and we seek to recreate here is a family atmosphere. I would not have fared well in a huge school. After all, I was from Yadkinville, North Carolina, so going to New York City was culture shock to me, so I'm sure going to a larger place would have been culture shock. But, you know, this was something that I really learned, not only from our staff, but in large part from Brother Comfort. I would hear phrases like this through the years, the ground is level at the foot of the cross. And that's true. You say, I'm a Bible college student. Let me tell you, you're a sinner saved by grace. That's what you are. And when you get in these churches, listen, I don't want folks in the area to think that you're some kind of elite. I'd just like for them to understand, they look at you and say, you know what, the ground is level at the foot of the cross. Brother Comfort used to say this. He'd say, here at Ambassador, there are no superiors or inferiors, only equals. Now, he wasn't saying that the inmates ran the prison. But you know what? He was the kind of man, and still is, that I could go and approach, and I didn't have to feel like I was coming in the presence of royalty. Listen, we'll all bow before one king. His name is Jesus. But I don't want any of our teachers, I don't want any of our staff members to have the idea that, or to convey the idea that they're unapproachable or that they are a superior. If I have to always lord over you because I'm the coach of a team, then I'm probably not much of a coach. If I have to manipulate you into loyalty, or I have to constantly beat the drum that I'm your supervisor or your leader or your president, then I'm not much of a leader to start with. I want it to be the kind of thing where instead of coming with fear and intrepidation, you come into a faculty member's office and just lay your burdens down and say, this is where I'm at. I want our faculty members to be accessible. Listen, if a faculty member, all he does is teaches in the classroom and that's it, he's not doing his job. If the only time you can see somebody is in a classroom, that's not the kind of person I want here at Ambassador. It's got to be an investment, where they're willing to invest their time outside of the classroom as well as in the classroom. Sometimes people come, Brother Bill, I need to talk to you, but I know you're so busy, and I just want to say, would you please get away with that? The whole reason any of us are here is because of you. And it goes beyond just merely teaching in a classroom. That's why we have the teachers eat with you in the cafeteria? That just didn't happen where we said, you know what, we don't have a room to put the hierarchy, so you're going to have to eat with the plebs. You know, sometimes it's just good to sit down and talk with Brother Surrett, not about homiletics, but about Carolina basketball. That's a lot better than talking about Duke basketball. That's akin to cursing. All right? But you know, I want you to be able to sit down with these ladies and these men, and I want you to be able to sit down with them on that level. And it's not just, yes, you should call them doctor or brother so-and-so. Yes, you ought to respect them. But understand here, it's not superiors and inferiors. Hey, we're all on a level playing field. You know, I worked in the Dean of Students office for years, and I'm very grateful for the ministry that the Dillons have, Brother Clark. They have in the Dean of Students office. I'm very well acquainted with it. And, you know, discipline is not a fun thing, but it's a needed thing. And the Dean of Students office is the kind where there are times they need to pat you on the back, and there's other times they need to take a 2x4 and help instruct you in the way of righteousness. It's called discipline. And you know, it's interesting to see the approach of some schools in recent years where the discipline factor was eliminated. You know, it's like, well, we're not going to give out demerits anymore. All right, well, let's just in our homes, let's just take away spankings too. I think that's great. Let's just have a free-for-all. No, there has to be a form of discipline that comes in this point in your life. We're certainly not going to spank you. But we do try to take means in order just to teach you some basic Christian character. In the Dean of Students' office, Brother Comfort, he told us these three things. He said, in the Dean of Students' office, he said, this is how I want it done. He said, I want it done, and how would Jesus discipline in this situation? What would Jesus do? He said, if my child was being disciplined, how would I want it done? You know, that eliminates sometimes public humiliation. I wouldn't want my children publicly humiliated. And I don't want you to be, unless you stand up and do something in public, and then you just warrant it that way because you've made that choice, but not the teacher. And then number three, what form of discipline will promote the greatest opportunity for restoration? That's the idea. It's not just all about the rules. I'm going to tell you, you live in an environment that's all about the rules, and it'll cause people to run out the door the first chance they get. Some of you are like, well, that's how I feel. You read the handbook lately? Yeah, I read it every year. As a matter of fact, I have to read it several times before it ever gets to you. And I know that there are rules there, but you know why those rules are there? Some of them are institutional rules to prevent chaos. Some of them are direct biblical convictions. But you know what? God teaches you submission. We're not asking you to do anything unreasonable. But I want you to know it's more than just a handbook. It's about you. It's about where you're at as a Christian. It's about your heart. And I find that once you hit the matter of the heart, you know what, those rule issues, they just sort of pass off the scene. Why? Because there's a heart of submission, there's a heart of yieldedness, and you know what, it's not an issue anymore. One of the things that you've discovered in your time here, if you've been here for 4 years, is the importance that we put on preaching. There's a reason every staff member and every faculty member is in every chapel, unlike most Christian schools. Because I think that what's being said in this room is so important, everybody ought to hear it. There's only one person, to my knowledge, that's not in here, and they're out at that information desk taking phone calls. That's why the maintenance staff is in here. You know why? Because they need preaching. Especially Brother Haynes. He really needs a lot of preaching. That's why the finance office is in here. Brother Bunn needs to be inspired in his faith. How can I inspire these kids about their finances? But you know what happens if you don't have people in here enjoying the preaching? You get a dichotomy, and there's no way we can go forward as a family. A hot preaching chapel platform. I want you to come in here with a spirit of anticipation. Why? Because there's a man who's going to come and preach the Word. That's why we have opening revivals, missions conferences, and Bible conferences when some people have forsaken them. Why? Because I don't want to be caught up in fads. I just want us to have the Word of God, and I want us to be able to hear the preaching of it. That's why chapel's the most important part of the day. You want to get in big trouble? I'll tell you how you do. You just don't pay attention in chapel. It's not a time to study. It's not a time to confer with your friends. It's not a time to play on your devices. You know, some guys say, well, I don't understand why I can't use, my phone for my Bible in class, or why I can't use my phone for my Bible in chapel. And some of you think it's because we think that you should go back to rotary dial phones and that all technology is of the devil. I can't wait to some of your youth pastors in the group. Some teenager says, yeah, why can't I use my phone for Bible and youth group? And the whole time they're glued to ESPN while you're teaching. You'll reap what you sow, brother. I'll tell you why. This Schofield Bible, it doesn't pop up notifications, Brother Childs. I can't see sports scores in it. But there's a few underlined verses I can pay attention to. We want your undivided attention. That's why. Why? Because the preaching of God's Word is of the most is the greatest importance. And then we talk about music. I'm so grateful this year that God has brought Brother Robertson our way to step in for a year to help us in a time of transition. You know what? When you come and you hear music, I want you to hear it done skillfully. And I want it to have a warmth and a heart to it. When you leave this place, your heart's been lifted up because of what you've heard in the music. Music's very controversial in freshman orientation. I spend two sessions on it, and every year I have people come up to me and they say, I've never thought about that before. And I look at them and think, you're right, I didn't either until I came to school. But you know, there's a lot of wind that's blowing in the area of music today in schools, and there's just some places we're not going to go. Some people say, well, I don't understand why we don't use some of this newer sounding stuff. I'll tell you, if you went to the average lost person and you played the contemporary Christian music today, just the words, and you played the music of the world, the lost people would be a lot more honest about what the music sounds like than most Christians. You know, when you have music that's used in certain areas today, and the people that wrote that music and then inspired that music, their inspirations were the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. Brother, do you want to draw from that well? You say, well, you know, maybe they wrote a good song. Well, maybe they did. A blind squirrel finds an acorn every once in a while. But, you know, even associationally, listen, I'm just not interested in dipping into those wells that were 99.9% of it is corrupt, and once in some blue moon something good comes up. Now, it's interesting to me that there are ministries today that hold their preaching to a different standard than their music. You say, what do you mean? I'll tell you what. I've had discussions in the area of music, Christian music. And a guy says, well, listen, just because so-and-so sung that doesn't mean that we can't use that. And like, for instance, you know, Elvis Presley sang Amazing Grace. I said, that is not even apples with apples here. That's apples with avocados. I mean, they're not even in the same group. I'm not talking about, you know, okay, so Whitney Houston sang Amazing Grace. We can't use Amazing Grace. And here's what I'm talking about. You take a top 10 number that was popularized in the CCM movement with a rock music style, and then you clean it up and bring it into the church and you justify it. And you say, don't dare talk to me about musical associations. And yet some of those same preachers would never quote John Piper, John MacArthur, R.C. Sproul, or Ligon Duncan, or Mark Devers. You say, who are those? Those are people that probably will influence you the wrong way. But they would never quote those men in a message, even if what they said was right. You know why? Because they would not want their people to pick up on the bad things. And so you know what's happened? In our Christian colleges today, I'll tell you what's happening. They hold their preaching to a higher standard than their music, and the music is going to be the gateway the wrong way. I just ask somebody to be consistent. I may not agree with them, but if they're consistent, I can at least respect their consistency. That's a little bit of why we do what we do here at Ambassador. You know, we teach about the gift of the evangelist. I'll tell you, it pains me. Churches today seemingly are less and less using the gift of an evangelist. It blesses me when I go into a church and they have you for 4 days or 6 days and they're like, wow, I never knew that we could have a meeting like this. I was like, well, when God gives an evangelist, it's a good thing, and when He exercises His gift. So here at the college, you know what? We train evangelists. We have several that are graduating this year in the evangelist major. It's not the main thing that we do, but it's a significant thing that we do because there's a need for Bible preaching evangelists today. You know, there's a lot more that I could say. I could talk about the accreditation issue that's going on today. We are one of very few schools now that are still not accredited. And I want you to know, I don't wear the non-accreditation status as a badge of honor. We're non-accredited and you're accredited and we're better than you. But I will tell you this, when the Department of Education comes knocking at doors saying, you know what, you're accredited and you're not hiring LGBT, we're going to pull your accreditation. Guess what? I don't have anything to apologize for. You say, that'll never happen. You don't know this, but in the Obama administration, there were guidelines, preliminary guidelines, that were floated by the Department of Education that would have either closed every Christian college or caused them to lose their accreditation. Now, those schools don't tell you that, and I understand it's not good PR. But as a ministry training school, we don't need the help of the world. The last thing I need for you to do is get government grants where you're $50,000 in debt working at Cracker Barrel 4 years after graduation, still paying it off and never making it to what God intended for you to do. By the way, that's why our tuition is like $13,000 in room and board, and in other places are $24,000 and $25,000. Half of it's coming in through government subsidy. And believe you me, if there's anybody in here that would like to not have financial pressure, it's me. It'd be nice. It'd be nice to, Brother Bunn comes in and says, well, we've got about $15,000 in bills that still need to be owed, and we're short on money. How short are we on money? $15,000. Get me those students. Let's line them up and shoot them. No. No, you know what we do? Hey, listen, you're working hard. Those of you that aren't working, now we'll gladly put a lot of pressure on you. But for those of you that are working, you're trying to do your best. What do? You just have to live by faith. And you know what? It's just year after year after year. That's how it has to happen. And so you need to learn that now as students. And so we're just not going to submit ourselves to government oversight. I don't know of churches that would submit their nurseries or Sunday schools or whatever as far as to, you know, like government approval in the sense of, you know, we're going to approve your programs. But that happens in accreditation. And so it's not just the fact of being a square or old-fashioned. No, it's a matter of conviction for us, because if we do that, we enter into a realm in which we greatly can compromise the purpose of the school. There's a lot of other things that I could say about Ambassador, but those are some things that make us unique, and we need your help. Need your help to hold us to the line. We need your help to embrace those things that I've told you. And in closing, I want to tell you that many times when you look at second generation wealth has been squandered. The Vanderbilts. Some of you girls are like, I want to go to the Biltmore. Well, I'll tell you what, maybe one day he'll take you. He'll have to shell out $50 to get a ticket, but it'll be well worth it, fellas, for a special date. The Vanderbilts built the Biltmore estate, but you know, when you look at the Vanderbilts, you find that with the Vanderbilts' second generation wealth, a study of that, you find that many times it's squandered. They waste it. And you know, the same thing happens generationally in Christian colleges and in churches, where the second generation wastes everything that the first generation laid down. They squander wealth. They squander the blessings of God. Why? Because it's unappreciated. They failed to acknowledge the price that was paid for them to enjoy what they have. Brother Comfort told you $400,000. Let me tell you, in our money today, that's probably more like $1 million. And you know why people give up the farm? Because they don't appreciate it. I'm going to tell you, there are men and women like Dr. Don Scovel and his wife Evelyn. They moved and just moved into a place of uncertainty, and they just sort of had to scrape together until things could come to fruition here. Let me tell you something, that was a price that was paid. But when people give up these foundation stones, they don't appreciate it. Sometimes people squander that wealth because it's unearned, because they've not made any personal sacrifice themselves. One of my biggest fears in this generation of ambassador is that we'll lose a pioneering aspect, we'll lose that self-investment. And you know what? When you don't have anything personally invested in it, it's not as important to you. It's unearned. I want God to always make us feel like, you know what, we've just got to be in the trenches, we've got to be working hard. And then wealth is squandered and blessings of God are squandered because people are unconcerned. They say, man, this school's been in existence for 30 years. Goodness gracious. A lot of water under the bridge. Boy, 1,000 graduates. Well, that's good. And ho-hum, listen to me. I'm not interested in being in the status quo or reflecting on the past, because I'm telling you, there are 7.5 billion people in this world that still need to be reached, and not nearly enough preachers and preachers' wives to do it. When you lose your urgency and you lose your concern, listen, I believe this school's needed more today than it was when he started it. It's no reflection on him, it's reflection on the time. But if we're unwilling to give, we're unwilling to sacrifice, we'll squander the blessings of God. And I'm certainly not interested in doing that. And so my prayer is that for our students, for our faculty, for our alumni, that we would continue to build the walls of ambassadors.